This is the Daily Update for Tuesday, March 13, 2018. President Trump said Tuesday he had ousted Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and plans to nominate CIA Director Mike Pompeo to replace him as the nation's top diplomat, orchestrating a major change to his national security team amid delicate outreach that includes possible talks with North Korea. Trump and Tillerson have had a fraught relationship for many months. Trump told reporters Tuesday that he ultimately decided to fire the secretary because they disagreed over strategy in key areas of foreign policy, such as the 2015 Iran nuclear deal and approach to North Korea and the overall tone of U.S. diplomacy. Still, the shakeup left officials at the State Department and throughout the national security community flummoxed, and the circumstances of the firing were in dispute. White House officials said that as Tillerson traveled through Africa last week, White House Chief of Staff John F. Kelly called him to wake him up in the wee hours there Saturday to alert him that Trump had decided to replace him. Trump had told his Chief of Staff he wanted to announce he was replacing Tillerson on Twitter. Kelly urged him to hold off, but we all know that Donald Trump is not a hold-off kind of guy, and he did it anyway, which is very interesting because this really is the most transparent administration, like it or not. You know what's going on basically all times because he's broadcasting it and putting it on Twitter and now doing live broadcasts from meetings that he's having. So in addition to this, President Donald Trump's pick to head the CIA, Gina Haspel, will be the first female director of the intelligence agency if confirmed. I must interject. You would think that a woman would have been appointed to the director of the CIA a long time ago, especially since the whole nosy type of spying type of thing, you know, it kind of fits the whole bill. So Haspel, who has served as deputy director of the agency under Mike Pompeo, Trump's pick to replace Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State since February of 2017, has accepted the new role, saying in a statement that she was grateful to President Trump for the opportunity and humbled by his confidence in her. Haspel is a career intelligence officer who joined the CIA back in 1985. In recent months, Haspel had been running the day-to-day operations at the agency while Pompeo spent a lot of time at the White House, according to former and current CIA officials with knowledge of the matter and a former White House official. One former CIA official said that Haspel's promotion is good for both places, the CIA and the state. The former CIA official added, "Haspel is a pro's pro." In her appointment last year as deputy director, Haspel garnered praise from high-level Obama-era and Bush-era appointees, including former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper and former CIA Director Michael Hayden. During her time at the agency, Haspel has held several senior leadership positions, including directorial roles in the National Clandestine Service and in the Counterterrorism Center, as well as several chief of station roles. Haspel had received several awards in her career, including the Presidential Rank Award, the most prestigious award in the Federal Civil Service. According to the New York Times, Haspel has spent most of her career undercover. So Trump is shaking up the team again. I think that you have to do this as time goes on to see where people fit in best. And I'll tell you about Rex Tillerson. He didn't look upset. He looked pretty happy, actually, getting into the car and leaving. They got pictures of him and the whole bit. So I think it's good for everybody. And it's history because now there's a woman who's going to be the director of the CIA, which is pretty interesting. So, jolly old England. Counterterrorist police are investigating the death of an exiled anti-Putin Russian mogul Nikolai Glushkov at his London home. Cops say that the 68-year-old's death is unexplained after his body was found with strangulation marks just before 11 p.m. last night. So, I must say that if there's strangulation marks around someone's neck, it's not unexplained. I think you know that what happened to them, basically they got strangled, they got killed. But this comes right after ex-Russian double agent Sergei Skripal and daughter Yulia 33 were poisoned using a nerve agent developed in Russia. Police are probing who targeted them, with Ms. May pointing the finger at Russia and giving Vladimir Putin a deadline of midnight tonight to explain his country's involvement. There is no suggestion the Salisbury poisoning was linked to Glushkov's death. Russian newspaper Kommersant, owned by Arsenal shareholder Alisher Usmanov, reported that there were traces of strangulation on his neck. Russian media claims Glushkov, a close friend of Putin's critic Boris Berezovsky before he was killed in 2013, was found by his daughter. The death is currently being treated as unexplained. If there is a change in the status of the investigation, an update will be provided. At this stage, the Met Police Counterterrorism Command is leading the investigation as a precaution because of associations that the man is believed to have had. A number of blue forensic tents were erected outside Glushkov's home overnight, with officers pouring over the scene. His body was found hours after the prime minister gave Putin until midnight to explain Russia's involvement in the Skripal poisoning in Salisbury. The British government is reported to be considering a range of sanctions against Putin, but the Russian embassy responded by saying any threat to take punitive measures against Russia will meet with a response. The British side should be aware of that. Police and MI5 are now expected to investigate 14 deaths with possible links to Russia. So, committing murder right in the UK's backyard, and at the same time, here's Theresa May and all the people there in the UK saying these terrible things about America and our rights, and we shouldn't have all these rights that we have, and it's amazing what they're saying, because in their own country, they can't even control what's going on, a very small country population-wise, and here is a bunch of Russians getting knocked off who will criticize Putin. Obviously, Vladimir Putin doesn't like being criticized, and there is a body trail following him for years and years and years. Reporters have written articles about him, and they died or committed suicide, supposedly, all kinds of terrible things. So she gives them midnight to explain all this stuff. They're not going to explain anything. The Russians don't care. If you think the Russians care about all this nonsense and sanctions from the UK, you don't know Russia. So it's just another peg in the Russian pegboard, isn't it? And then if people criticize Putin, it doesn't seem like they're around for any length of time. So let's talk about the sun. A huge solar storm is headed for Earth, and it's likely to hit tomorrow. The storm could knock out satellites, disrupt power supplies, and spark stunning displays of the northern lights. It was created last week by an enormous explosion in the sun's atmosphere known as a solar flare, and charged particles from that flare are now on their way to our planet. The arrival of the solar storm coincides with the formation of equinox cracks in the Earth's magnetic field, which some scientists believe form around the equinoxes on March 20th and September 23rd each year. These cracks weaken our planet's natural protection against charged particles and could leave commercial flights and GPS systems exposed to the incoming storm. The cracks also mean stargazers are more likely to catch glimpses of the northern lights this week. This may include parts of Scotland and northern England, as well as the northern tier of the U.S., including parts of Michigan and Maine. The charged magnetic particles from the solar storm can interfere with machinery in the Earth's orbit as well as the planet's surface, such as GPS systems and radio signals. They can also threaten airlines by disturbing Earth's magnetic field. Very large flares can even create currents within electricity grids and knock out energy supplies. So, keep your batteries on hand. Sometimes batteries wouldn't even work. If there was a big enough electromagnetic pulse, it would knock everything out, which would be chaos and mayhem. But this also only affects the Earth from whatever side that it hits. So really, you could knock out half the planet, and the other half the planet would be A-OK. So pretty interesting how that works. And thinking about all of that, let's celebrate the day today. Today is National Canine Veterans Day. So a lot of things changed after the bombing of Pearl Harbor in 1941. Oil, leather, and rubber were rationed. Men were drafted. Women rolled up their sleeves and built war supplies. And dogs were called to duty. During the First World War, the United States took notice of the European use of canines as sentries, message carriers, and several other functions. Dogs for Defense was a program initiated by a private citizen by the name of Mrs. Aileen Erlanger. Along with the American Kennel Club and a handful of breeders, the group aimed to train dogs for military use. By November of 1942, the first Dogs for Defense were prepared for duty in North Africa. While at first they were gun-shy, they proved to be well-trained. As the war progressed, Dogs for Defense were unable to keep up with demand, and the Remount Branch Service Installations Division took over the training of the dogs. Over the years, the military, police, and rescue squads have developed a variety of training methods for canine units. Their training is tailored to meet the demands of the job, and each animal and handler carries out his or her duty to the fullest. National Canine Veterans Day is celebrated on March 13th, on the official birthday of the U.S. Army Canine Corps, which was formed in 1942. Joseph White, a retired military working dog trainer, originated the idea for the day. So think about all those dogs who have saved so many people. There have been dogs that have dragged wounded men out of combat. These dogs are soldiers and they're heroes, and they should be thought about on this day and honored. Today is also Ken Day. So Ken, of course, is Barbie's counterpart. Ken Day celebrates the occasion in 1961 when Barbie's long-term on-and-off boyfriend Ken Carlson first appeared on the scene, exhibited by his makers, Mattel, at a toy fair. In spite of some unfair comments about his manliness and the rather more likely suggestions that he cared more about his clothes than his love life, Barbie, the romance blossomed. The couple had a brief separation in the 1960s, but then stayed together until 2004. Then, in a move that shocked the world of plastic celebrities like the Kardashians, Barbie announced their breakup and transferred her affections to Blaine Gordon, an Australian surfing dude. Ken haven't given up, though, and in 2011 made some much-publicized attempts to celebrate their 15th anniversary by winning her back. You know what, Ken? You should run the other way, man. Barbie's too high maintenance. You know what I'm saying? And she cheated on the dude. She went for the other guy, the surfer, man. Come on, really? So think about that, Ken, today. Today is also Earmuff Day. So the beginning of spring is often the last blows of the reign of winter terror. One moment you could be basking in the shining warmth of the returning sun, and the next it's literally freezing out and biting rain and snow is pounding your ears into iceberg lettuce. Thankfully, one masterful Chester Greenwood came up with a solution for this untrustworthy weather that allows you to abandon the hats of winter for a far more comfortable and practical bit of headwear. Chester Greenwood from Farmington, Maine, invented the earmuff in 1873 at the age of 15 years old. He reportedly came up with the idea while ice skating, and he asked his grandmother to sew tufts of fur between loops of wire. Now Mr. Greenwood was simply looking for a way to keep our ears warm in the cold winter months, but he couldn't have possibly imagined all the purposes his seemingly simple and innocent piece of headgear would be turned into. Now, what was the earmuff is called the thermal earmuff and has been joined by the acoustic earmuff. In case that doesn't tell you straight away what they are, these are the heavy-duty sound dampeners worn by construction site workers the world over. These are much more effective than the earplug and really serves to save your ears. So, think about Chester Greenwood today and earmuffs and keeping those ears warm. I wouldn't trade my hat for earmuffs, that's for sure, but earmuffs and a hat, that works. Or you can just get one of those cool hats that kind of have little flaps on the side that you can pull down. That works too, man, but keep those ears warm. Today's also Organize Your Home Office Day. So home offices are more commonplace by the year, and today 1 in 4 American households have one. You don't have to be self-employed or work from home to have a home office. It can be used simply for sorting through bills, finances, documents, and all those other fun things that we love saving for rainy days. workspace and having a designated workspace that can make everything run faster and smoother. Still, as with the kitchen, living room, and pretty much every other room under the roof, the home office can become messy, dusty, cluttered, disorganized, and as a result of this combination, a hindrance to its very purpose. Organize Your Home Office Day counters this chaos by providing the motivation to throw away the trash and shred the unwanted paperwork, recycle those drink cans, and polish the desk. Clean the windows, alphabetize your filing system, fill up your stationery reserves, and maybe even get a potted plant to help energize the room even further. So put on some music, get your coffee going, and clean out that office today and be happy about it because you'll have a nice clean space until the next day. Today's also Open an Umbrella Indoors Day. So everybody knows that opening an umbrella indoors is supposed to be bad luck, but is there any truth behind this age-old superstition? Fortunately, for those spending sleepless nights pondering this question, there is actually a wacky holiday dedicated to finding out the truth. The aptly named Open an Umbrella Indoors Day was invented in 2003 by a man called Thomas Nibb. Nibb allegedly hoped to defy silly superstitions by encouraging people to open their umbrellas indoors and observe the non-existent consequences. The best thing about this bizarre holiday is that anyone can take part in it. Just follow these four simple steps. Step number one, find an umbrella and check that you are indeed indoors. Step number two, position yourself clear of breakable objects and or people who value their eyesight. Step number three, take a deep breath, grasp the umbrella handle firmly with one hand, and open the umbrella with your other hand. Step number four, note any bad luck that occurs in your following days or weeks. So here's my disclaimer. I'm not telling you guys to do this, so people who take part in this holiday do so at their own risk. Today's also Coconut Tort Day. So what could be more exciting than the smell of a cake in the oven? Not just any cake. This will need at least three layers of sponge, but it's not about the sponge. It's all about the filling. Creamy, coconutty, close your eyes type of I'm in the Caribbean feeling. You know what I mean? So a regular cake mix will probably do for the sponge because remember, it's not about the sponge. If you've got a good recipe of your own, wheel it out. For the filling, you'll need lots of sour cream, flaked coconut, and sugar. Whip it all together and smother the sponge cake in it on all sides and in between, then devour. And I'll tell you an easy way. You buy a pound cake and you slice up the pound cake and you mix your little coconut filling together and then you use that instead. Perfect, man. You've got some coconut tort bliss. Coconuts were available in the United States in the early 1700s, even though the palm was not indigenous to the continental United States. There are many recipes using coconut, including cakes, cookies, torts from that era. So it was certainly as popular an ingredient as it is today. So I love everything coconut. So enjoy your coconut tort today. Today is also Donald Duck Day. So there's some debate as to when Donald Duck's birthday is and when Donald Duck Day should be celebrated. This has made Donald Duck one lucky duck as there are 2 days that celebrate him each year. Donald Duck's first appearance on screen was in the animated short film, The Little Wise Hen, on June 9th, 1934, and Disney later made this his official birthday. Donald Duck Day is celebrated on the anniversary of that date each year, and in 1941, the biography of Donald Duck, Walt Disney's The Life of Donald Duck, says that Donald Duck was born on a Friday the 13th. The 1949 short film, Donald's Happy Birthday, celebrates his birthday on March 13th. The license plate of his car is the number 313, likely a reference to his birthday. Donald's full name is Donald Fauntleroy Duck, as he is known for his sometimes temperamental personality. He is many times associated with his nephews, Huey, Louie, and Dewey, and his girlfriend, Daisy. So, to celebrate Donald Duck Day, check out some Donald Duck, watch some Donald Duck on TV, or go out and have some roasted duck today. Today is also Smart and Sexy Day. So Smart and Sexy Day was put out to show women that they were entirely capable of both being smart and sexy, that every part of the way you dress and present yourself is a valid expression of both femininity and capability. As a part of showing the importance of these two forces combined, there is a recognition that those who have been suffering from unemployment can often find it difficult to make the right impression during an interview. After all, no matter your capability, it's often difficult to get that job that matches your skills when you can't dress the part in an interview. First impressions, after all, are everything in an interview. The ACDN, the organization that started Smart and Sexy Day, works with thousands of women every year to help give them a leg up that they need to become self-supportive and confident in their lives, which is a great thing. So dress the part, look the part, look good, feel good, all that stuff on Smart and Sexy Day, and it could appeal to men too, right? Because men can also be smart and sexy, you know? So today is also Jewel Day. So jewel is a term used to refer to gemstones, precious or semi-precious, and natural or man-made. There are over 130 types of minerals that have been used as gemstones. Along with the minerals, there are also artificial and synthetic stones, and also a number of rocks that are classified as gems. The word jewel comes from the medieval Latin jocal, meaning plaything. And let's face it, there is nothing like a precious gem given to us on our birthday or gifting someone special in your life on their birthday or for a holiday or anniversary or whatever. And every month has its own stone, right? So January, you've got the garnet. February, you've got the amethyst. March, you have the aquamarine. April, you have the diamond. May, you have the emerald. June, you have the pearl. July, you have the ruby. August, you have the peridot. September, you have the sapphire. October, you have the opal. November, you have the yellow topaz, citrine. December, you have the tanzanite, zircon, or blue topaz. So with a variety of cuts and colors, I'm sure that you're going to find one that is perfect for that special someone, or for you to put on around your neck, around your finger, or whatever, yeah, or just get a whole bunch of gems and play with them, right? So think about that on Jewel Day. And then today's also National Good Samaritan Day. So National Good Samaritan Day, of course, is observed on March 13th. This day is also known as Good Samaritan Involvement Day. This is a day for unselfish actions to help those in need and to celebrate kindness. The term Good Samaritan comes from the Bible parable where a Samaritan helped a stranger who had been robbed and beaten and left to die on the side of the road. The Samaritan not only cleaned the man's wounds and clothed him, but took him to an inn where he paid for the man's care. The term is used today to describe those who perform acts of kindness for those in need, especially those who are strangers. Make an effort to help someone who is struggling or having a problem, not just today, but you could be a good Samaritan every day. So my research has found that this day is in honor of the death of Catherine Kitty Genovese, who was murdered near her home on March 13, 1964 in New York City. In Miss Genovese's case, had just one good Samaritan step forward that night, she may be alive today. Her killer was interrupted two times, each interruption witnessed by neighbors or passerby, but no one called the police. After his third and successful attempt, one person finally called, but it was too late for Miss Genovese. So think about that today. And probably these days, people would sit there and then record it because we've seen that. They whip out their cell phones and record someone getting beaten up or killed or whatever, and they don't do anything to stop it. But those people are not good Samaritans, right? So this is Michael Engley on the Daily Update for Tuesday, March 13th, 2018, on United Public Radio Network, UPRNTalkRadio.com, 107.5 New Orleans, 104.7 in Pasquistan.